This one's good if it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
Because you got hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it.
Jones.
Yeah.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast. I'm Seth Greenberg with my man Dan Dukich, who is basically tidied up in the washroom, looking very good, by the way. The dome looks magnificent. You have some news for us, so I'm going to let you go.
Well, the dome looks magnificent because yesterday, my wife, the lovely Lee Ross Dukich, and I taped a segment for NBC's Kelly Clarkson's show. And we have a bicycle deal in Indianapolis where we ask people to donate. We give free bikes, helmets, and locks to kids. And the Kelly Clarkson show gave us $5,000, Seth.
Get out.
It's unbelievable. And if you want to donate, anybody out there in podcast land, it's go to indianasportscorp.org/ Dukich Cycles, and a link comes up. And our goal is to give 300 bikes away. Last year we did 150, but man, Kelly Clarkson said, she's really cool. And she gave us, through her thing, $5,000. That's a ton of bikes for kids.
How many bikes is $5,000 money?
It's basically two, because we get locks and they're all new, you know. It's basically 250. So what is that, 20 bikes? So that's a big deal, man. That's 20 kids riding around getting freedom. So, but anyway, that was a very, very, very nice gesture that frankly we did not know was coming. And we will take it, and we will be very happy about it. So there you go.
That's incredible. I mean, like, just the whole experience, the Kelly show. I mean, like, did Lee have to take over that interview?
No, come on. I'm a professional. I'm a damn pro, big boy. Of course she did. Of course she did. But the cool thing was, she was really cool. And the cool thing about it was, like, we got in, you know, my daughter's first concert was a Kelly Clarkson concert. My daughter was telling me, Dad, don't you remember when she won American Idol, we ran upstairs and called on the landline to vote for Kelly Clarkson. You know, back in the day, they would say, hey, call me, you know, that kind of stuff. So that was pretty cool to be able to share that and tell Kelly that. And I don't know, man, that was pretty good. There you go.
I like it. All right. We're going to just do two things right now. Number one, everyone is up in arms about Mark Emmert getting an extension. And if people are up in arms about Mark Emmert getting an extension, then let's put our venom and our why we're upset in the right direction. The Board of Governors of the NCAA makes decision on who gets extended. And his contract, which is made up of member institutions, also some people outside of institutions, basically college presidents, some college athletic directors, and some others. The others, including like a guy like Grant Hill, who's on that board. So I mean, like, it isn't like Mark Emmert said, you know, I decided I'm gonna continue to be president of the NCAA. It's basically this board decided that they wanted to extend him a contract extension. So, like, if you're upset about that, be upset at the board. Be upset at the members of the board. Be upset at the presidents of the universities. Be upset with the Grant Hills and the other people that are involved in the decision-making process. Don't be upset with the guy that basically was offered. He didn't offer himself. He was offered an extension because of the Board of Governors and no one else. So, sometimes we want to blame. And it doesn't make any sense. Like, there's a process that everything needs to go through. And that was the process of hiring or extending a president of the NCAA. I just don't get it. I'm not a Mark Emmert fan. I don't know him. I don't like him. I don't dislike him. I think he's got a thankless job. His, you know, you're talking about Division One, Two, Three. You're talking about Division One, 357 schools that play basketball. There's not a lot of commonality in terms of everything that's going on. I think it's a thankless job, but I just, you know, I don't get it sometimes.
Well, in our world, you know this, nobody's going to criticize Grant Hill. Why is Grant Hill on there? Why is Robert Gates on there? The only reason Robert Gates, former defense secretary, is on there is because he went to Indiana University, and everybody that's smart went to Indiana University. That's the only thing I can think. Nobody criticizes. Nobody's ever – I'm surprised Condoleezza Rice wasn't on there. Isn't she like the guru? Here's the deal that I don't understand. Whenever I see these things, and if the NCAA is so broken, fine. If that's what people want to think. I think the NCAA, frankly, gives great opportunities to kids that otherwise wouldn't have them. And I think they give a ton of them. And I think they've made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And I think Mark Emmert, I'm with you. I don't know him. I don't care for him, discare for him. All I know is this. He does what Roger Goodell does. He takes all the bullets from all the guys and gals that haven't been in a locker room for 30 years yet know everything about the goings-on and what should go on at the NCAA. He takes all the bullets and doesn't fire back. And that's his job, and he's paid handsomely for it. But I'm so totally with you. It's the easiest thing in the world, you know, when it doesn't go the way you want. Lack of leadership. Well, why don't you criticize Grant Hill? I'm waiting for all of our colleagues to say, well, Grant Hill's a part of it. No, they're never going to say that. The easiest thing is, hey, man, Mark Emmert. I think it's a joke. But it seems to me we have it backwards. Like, it seems to me that we should get people that are and have been in locker rooms on these deals. It seems to me that we should get more people that are coaches involved in things. And I'm not talking about basketball or football coaches. I'm talking about anybody that has sense and cares. We just have people that are external, and external is not very good when you're making these kind of decisions.
Here's my other one. Now, obviously, the one-time transfer exception is went through, and it's going to be in play. Here's my thing. How long will it be before, like, you got to understand, like the kid, Leon Robbins, the kid who was at Minnesota, right, he transferred already. So now he's transferring again. So he's going to have to appeal for a waiver, I guess, is my understanding, unless everyone gets a waiver this year. So how long will it be before every second-time transfer appeals for a waiver and then we lose our minds on it because, wait a second, you know, why should this kid be able to transfer? Well, we put the rule in for the one-time transfer exception. We're going to have 2,000 people in the transfer portal. There's no doubt about it. We have 1,500 now. At the end of the first summer session, before July 1, when guys are back on campus, maybe they don't get things the way they wanted it, you're going to see another wave of transfers. And that's just the way it is. I'm talking to a lot of guys. They're saying they're not bringing their guys back for the first summer session. They don't want to deal with it. Or if they do, they're not going to do anything competitive. They're going to just flat out skill work, shooting, concept work, 5-on-0, nothing where you're hitting on each other because they don't want to upset the apple cart, which is such a sad thing when you think about it. So basically you're afraid to coach your team. I mean, that's basically it is. I mean, it's basically you're afraid to help someone get somewhere they can't get themselves, to challenge someone, to set a standard and hold someone to a standard because you're afraid that you will upset that person and therefore lose them prior to July 1. There's something wrong with that, but you're going to have 2,000 people. That's going to be four players, minimum of four players a team. Four players a team that'll be transferring. And you know what? You know, I think of it is what it is, but it just seems to me like the waiver process of a second-time transfer is going to create the same problem we had before we had the one-time transfer exception. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts are exactly right. I mean, look, we're going to start having guys appeal, and then they're going to grant appeals because they don't want to be challenged, and away we go. My wife and I were talking about this. The one thing that she did say, though, and maybe, you know, sports are different. I get all that. But she did say that, you know what, women's softball always had the one-time transfer immediate eligibility, and it never rose to, okay, we want another waiver for a second transfer. Basketball, different than softball. Football, different than basketball. I get all that. I think you're right. I'm anxious to see how it all plays out. But I can't see a situation where in basketball, a second transfer doesn't ask for a waiver. And I can't see a situation where a year, 2 years from now, where the powers to be on television and, you know, start whining about kids should be able to all transfer a second time. I absolutely agree with you. I don't think it's good. I think it's great for right now, but I never thought as a coach, and I actually never thought this as a player, I never thought going to college was about right now. I always thought going to college was about the future. And I always thought that going to college was an instant gratification. We think it's instant gratification now. And I'm going to be curious 5-7 years from now, when you talk to some of these guys, and if you can get them to talk honestly that did all this transferring and they look back on it and they say, well, is it a good thing? The one thing that I laugh at is I hear our colleagues say, well, a one-time transfer is going through and the world is still on its axis. Well, you know what? The world was on its axis when we had a year to sit out. The world was on its axis when we had waivers. I laugh so hard at that kind of stuff. Well, the sky hasn't fallen because we've allowed transfer. Well, the sky wasn't falling when we didn't allow a one-time transfer. So I'm really curious because, Seth, I've said this a million times on our podcast, every single player that transferred in or transferred out, and I was involved as a coach, whether it was at Bowling Green or whether it was at Indiana, said the best year they had for growth was the year they sat out. That's them. Not me, not you, not anybody in the media. That's them. And I'm curious to see a year from now, 5 years, 7 years from now, what kids with a one-time transfer feel. I really am.
The interesting thing to me, it seems almost like trading places. You got guys transferring within leagues. You got guys, I mean, you got leading scorers transferring. And you look, here's what I think is going to happen. You're going to see one or two powerful personalities as players try to create what we always mimic the NBA. That's just
sure.
Try to create super teams of transfers.
Sure.
And I really believe that that's going to be the next step. And the coach that gets ahead of that and says, right, who's the guy that stirs the drink? Who's the guy that with the best, biggest voice? Who's the guy that other people want to play with? All right, if I can get him, he can then basically help recruit me a class of transfers. Does that make any sense? Because I
know it looks
always mimic the NBA.
I usually downplay that because you and I have been in the business long enough to know where guys say, well, I'm going to get my buddy to come to play with me. And that rarely happens, right? Over history, going backwards, right? It rarely, a Conley and Odin went to Ohio State, but you hear that all the time. And I've always thought, yeah, it's not going to happen. Don't worry about it. Now I do think it is because of exactly what you said. When you look at the NBA, and I'm going down to the barest level, why do guys in college wear the Allen Iverson sleeve? Because Allen Iverson wore it. Why do guys in college come off the bench and put the towel on their head or put the towel on their legs? Because they see NBA guys doing it. Why do guys get the ball in the post and go like this before they make – because they see guys – they don't know what the hell they're doing. They just know that guys in the NBA do it. The super team thing is an NBA thing that 1,000% is coming. Maybe it's already here. Maybe that's what Duke's done, with Reddish and Barrett and Williamson. Maybe they already did. Maybe Kentucky's already done it, but it hasn't been publicized. But I think it's absolutely coming. And I hope when it comes, I hope a team like Baylor beats their ass.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor's done a good job. You talk about Baylor. You look at Freddie Gillespie a couple of years ago, who's now in the NBA. You talk about Davion Mitchell, transfer. You talk about Maceo Teague, transfer. I mean, they built – now the guys sat out, but they built their program. And people don't understand when you sit out, you also get a better understanding of the system.
Oh.
Part of what's expected of you, and you immerse yourself. And you play with a free mind. That, like, the years that guys sitting out, like they make every shot. Like they're, hey, Doncic, you're going to be Redick. And all of a sudden, Doncic, who couldn't make a shot, all of a sudden he's coming off screens, bam, he makes it. And they gain actually confidence, which is important. Last thing, watch this the other day. You know what? Because I'm correlating to the NBA. Kevin Durant is so efficient offensively, it's ridiculous. Like everyone wants to try to find a player to emulate. Like Kevin Durant never takes more than two dribbles. I watched him the other day. It was amazing. That dude gets a shot off of one and two dribbles, and a lot of times no dribbles, like by move without the ball, like by covering ground when he throws the ball out, by just a quick change of direction, hit the spot and elevate. Now, look, he's 6'10". He's got long arms. He got a quick release, all that stuff. But, like, we all try to copy someone. Like, instead of, like, copying a guy that's just handling it and doing all this crazy stuff, that's, like, being efficient offensively is the most underappreciated thing in basketball. And to me, you can call it what you want. I mean, like, we have different levels of ball screen. Like, you engage the guy. Well, you don't engage the guy. Well, you set the guy up. I don't care whether you're on the ball or off the ball. You set a cut up. I mean, that's what you do. With you're on the ball, you get the guy leading. If you can get a lead, and then you can set a ball screen. You can make two people play you, or you can force the defense into a bind. And then you read the guys away from the basketball. Who's tagging a roller? Who's helping? You know, what's their coverage? But we look at so many things about, like, different guys. The efficiency of playing with a purpose. I just watching Durant, I've been watching more NBA stuff. That dude is so purposeful in the way he plays.
It's funny you bring that up. We didn't talk about this before we went on here. He scored 42 last night against the Pacers. And I was kind of watching between that and the NBA draft or the NFL draft. And Seth, I was watching without the sound. And I swear to God, I was thinking the exact same thing. In fact, we're taping this a little bit early in the morning, so I'm going to go back. I was going to do this anyway, but you brought this up. I was going to go back and see how many dribbles he took. I'm not talking about if he had to bring the ball up, you know, like maybe the Pacers pressure. I was going to do that. I was going to see how many dribbles this guy took last night, because I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm not watching it real close, but I know this. Seth, I'd be shocked if he took 40 dribbles to get 42 points. I'd be shocked if he took 30. I'm talking about in half-court offense now. Okay, I'm not talking about, you know, Pacers are picking up full court. You throw it to Durant, he brings it across, he kicks it, he gets it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about once they get into a situation. Seth, I'm telling you, it's so funny you said that, because I saw it last night, and the dude scored 42 without breaking a sweat.
I know.
You know?
And that's just understanding how to play. I mean,
yes, like, 100%.
Understanding how to play, you know. Catching in a spot, holding a guy off, waiting on a screen, going and actually putting the ball out by the defense. I mean, all the things that you learn in camp, you know, that we used to emphasize all the time, but now we're dribbling tennis balls and we're doing pullbacks and like, yeah, that's great. But here's maybe the best offensive player in the NBA, and he's just doing it like, I'm just sitting there watching. I'm going, this dude is just so ridiculously efficient. That's the guy we need to be showing. Like, if I'm a coach, I'm showing my wing guys that guy and saying that's who you should try to play like.
Yeah, and off the ball. I mean, off the ball, he's ridiculous. He, you know, the one thing about good off the ball players is they don't look at the ball. You know, they look at the defense, they read the defense, and then they find the ball, and then you got to have a guard that's smart enough not to give it up until the guy's ready. Being a point guard or being the guy with the basketball on offense when you have a cutting, moving team is really difficult, because you got a guy hanging on you, you got to deliver the ball on time, on target, all that kind of stuff. They do it really well, and Durant makes himself available. And I'm shocked, because let's be honest, Seth, I know the Nets have a really good team, and I know some guys are hurt, some guys are in, some guys are out. But if I'm scouting the Nets, I'm jumping on top of Kevin Durant, and I'm saying, look, eliminate. I'm not letting him get his points, because he can go get 80 if you let him get his points or whatever the common thing is. Eliminate this, and you just can't because of how smart he is. You can't.
There you go. World's greatest podcast, A to Z. We didn't even talk about the NFL draft.
Yeah, but we can't talk about 9 to noon on Saturday. Sirius XM 84 is my show with a special guest, as always, Seth Greenberg. And, ladies and gentlemen, we might have a segment, if he comes on this Saturday, where you can place your bets on the golf match that's coming up in 2 weeks at the Greenbrier. There might be odds on
that. That will be a very, very big match. That will be a very big match. Because I think that you and your partner, I want to stay with my man, Coach Lang, my hockey coach friend. And this will be a very big match. And I'm going to work on my craft the next 2 weeks, because it comes and goes, if you know what I mean.
Do I know what you mean? That's my whole life. Comes and it goes. Go Kelly Clarkson. Go to indianasportscorp.org/docketcycles for the city. Go Greenberg Wedding. Go rate us a 5.
That's what I'm talking about. Taylor, our work is done.
I'm excited to welcome in Coach Tommy Lloyd, the new head coach at Arizona. And Tom, first of all, congratulations. I think this is like one of the coolest hires of the year, because I went and, you know, researched all the stuff about, you said the one place that you would leave Gonzaga for when you were the coach in waiting was Arizona. And that became a reality. When they approached you, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the things that went through my mind. And then, so, you know, when they did, and they said there wasn't going to be a ton of candidates, and I was one of them. You know, I talked to my wife, and I said, all right, we're going to do this, because I kind of wanted to wrap my head around making the decision. If I got offered, I was going to accept it, you know, or not pursue it, you know. And so we talked, and, you know, with our son being in Phoenix and, you know, and two daughters at a decent age to move. I mean, not perfect, I guess, every time once they're growing up, but we felt comfortable with it. And then, I mean, come on, it's Arizona. So you put all those things together, and we were like, let's do this.
The one thing you'll find out is the girls, they'll figure it out. We moved 3 times with ours.
Yeah.
We went from Long Beach to Tampa to Blacksburg. And then actually my youngest one ended up our last year in Avon, Connecticut. It's, they figure it out. They're almost like military kids.
Yeah. I
mean, you guys have obviously had great stability. You know, there was so much, you know, I've been through this 3 times, but there's, you know, not in your situation, because let's face it, in Arizona, rich tradition, Lute Olson and the number of players they've had great success with, won national championships with, and they selected you. And, you know, there's a faction of people that, like, and any other job, that say, you know, we want one of our own guys. How difficult is that to kind of navigate now that you're sitting in that chair trying to kind of plant seeds and kind of get everyone on the same page?
Well, you know, to me, I get that those former players would want one of their own. And if their former players were saying, we don't want to hire our ex-teammate, we want to hire Tommy Lloyd, I think that would be pretty strange. You know? So I totally get it. And listen, I come from a great basketball family up at Gonzaga, and I know how much pride those guys have. You know, so once it was me, it hasn't been that difficult. The guys have been great. I mean, a lot of the former players have already reached out to me on their own and talked to me and gave me their support. And, you know, and then the guys, I've reached out to a bunch of other guys and had great conversations. At the end of the day, I don't want this to be about me. You know, yeah. I want it to be about Arizona basketball. And so if I can create an environment and a culture where those guys are honored, and when they're watching an Arizona game with their kids or their grandkids, they're feeling immense pride, that's what I want. I want to kind of remove myself from the equation. I want to help everybody come together and then get this thing rolling. And then I want to kind of step off stage left and then coach the team and then let the Arizona tradition and these guys' pride carry forward.
You moved from assistant coach to head coach. You know, I was fortunate to do that at Long Beach State when Joe Harrington moved to Colorado. Obviously it's a different job, but you know, the hardest thing is to find balance, you know, yeah. I mean, because there's so many people pulling out. Now you worked with a guy that had the most incredible balance in the history. Like if he calls me one more time while he's whale watching, I mean, I'm going to lose it. Like, yeah. You know, or, you know, that picture of him at his lake house or whatever, you know, I mean, how do you find that balance with so much to do?
Well, I have spent lots of time at that lake house with him out on the dock. So I know the place well, and my kids basically spend all summer there. And it's an amazing spot. Yeah, I mean, you know, he definitely has like more hobbies than I do, you know, fishing, pickleball, stuff like that. But my hobby when I'm not doing basketball is just people. I love spending time with people, conversations, you know, sitting around the fire, whatever. So obviously I know balance is going to be tough to get started here because I'm a relationship guy. So I want to get relationships with everybody around here. And that's when I operate at my best. So I'm kind of putting extra effort into that right now. But eventually once I have those relationships established, you know, I mean, I love basketball. I love thinking basketball. I love coaching basketball. I love tinkering basketball. I don't mind watching film, you know? So I guess that kind of is my hobby and, you know, maybe that's a sickness, but it's kind of what I've always done. So I'm going to start on that path. And then if it starts beating me down, then I'll adjust.
Look, you gotta be you. I mean, like, you know, I was very much like you. I was not a person with a lot of outside interest, except for my family. I was basically in a cocoon, but, you know, and my brother was like Fuey, who, when he was in my assistant coach, Brad, like, you know, I used to call him a Renaissance man. He goes, "You're so simple." I said, "Well, I just want to get players, coach players, and make sure they're successful." Yeah. I said, "It works best that way." You know, speaking of that, I also read a thing which I thought was fascinating. I had no idea how you started your international thing, but you're a world-class traveler, I guess. I heard that story. That is fascinating how just the idea of traveling internationally and then Fuey basically saying, you know what, we got to find a little bit different of a niche. This might be an area that you might pursue. How long ago was that?
Boy, that would have been like in, you know, 2000, right around there, you know, 20 some years ago. And, you know, I traveled before that. My family had always had exchange students. So I had a fascination with other cultures. And, you know, traveling is so interesting because most people are like, "Oh my God, we're going to Europe. I mean, that's a 10-hour flight, you know, no way." And I always looked at it like 10 hours and I'm halfway across the world. That's amazing. So I always took that approach. And whenever I land in Europe and get off that plane and smell that cigarette smoke, I feel like I'm home. So yeah, I've always enjoyed traveling. I mean, I haven't been in a couple of years because of COVID, but yeah, I miss getting over there and just have so many great relationships, great friends, and seen so many cool places that, you know, I don't look at it as a burden. I look at it as a, you know, an honor and an opportunity.
What's your favorite place over there? Obviously, you've had players from all over.
Yeah.
And I, you know, obviously, sometimes it's tied into that special player, to that special player. But, like, what's your place that you just, like, when you go there, you go, "Wow, this is unbelievable"?
Well, I think if you're going on a vacation, you know, I mean, Sardinia is amazing. And it's that little island in the Mediterranean there, that Italian island. It's like, it's got white sand beaches like the Caribbean and Italian food. So it combines a lot of things for a great vacation. But I, you know, as far as any of those cities, I love all of them. I mean, I've been to, taking my family to the depths of Indonesia, where we've literally, you know, had to take a 2-hour ferry ride, a 1-hour cab ride, a 3-hour, you know, excursion in a van that you didn't know if it was going to make it. And then you end up in this, the most amazing, you know, kind of like, I don't know what you call those things, or those little hotel rooms are out on the water, you know, that are built on stilts and stuff, like, you know, yeah. So, I mean, places like that, it's been amazing. So, I mean, I try to enjoy each place and opportunity and, you know, but if I'm giving somebody like, "Hey, where do you got to start if you're taking a trip?" I think it's pretty hard to beat Rome. You know, if you're taking one trip, like, okay, let's go see, like, you could literally walk that city for days and see new stuff over and over again.
That's an amazing. I used to do clinics for Benetton Basket when Maurizio was the GM there. And Mike D'Antonio. Treviso. And so we'd fly over, then they'd fly us to Rome one day and we'd have a tour guide and all that jazz. And you can never go wrong in Italy.
No.
You can't. And those people were so welcoming. I mean, for 4 straight summers. And then we ended up doing the Adidas Euro Camp.
Yeah,
which was right back there, which was unfortunately is no longer. No. Because that was a great experience.
Yeah, I've heard lots of people with great memories from those days, for sure.
The Euro Camp was unbelievable. So, all right, you put together your staff. It's like, you know, the first whatever month,
Yeah.
You got three guys from Gonzaga that like part of your infrastructure. You held on to two assistant coaches.
Yep.
And now you're probably looking for a fit.
Yeah.
Sizes of staffs are huge now. We were talking prior to coming on the air. To me, I think it's almost overwhelming. I couldn't imagine, like, I hear guys, 16 and 17 guys on our staff, and I'm going, like, I don't want 17 guys in a staff meeting. I don't want to worry about 17 guys doing something stupid, to be honest with you, that can impact me. What do you try to do with your staff?
Well, I just know this. I could never tell you how many guys we had on our staff at Gonzaga because we never had a staff meeting.
That's right.
It was like one guy here, two guys there, and everybody was separated. So, but here, no. I mean, I think the main thing is, I think you're right. I think you have to be really mindful how big your staff is, because what you want is you want to create owners. And if you have too many guys and you know, whatever, it's what it's a idle time's the devil's playground. You know what I mean? Where they don't have stuff to do. And then, you know, they start competing with each other and you get these weird little factions and cliques on your staff. And at the end of the day, one of the main things I always want to do, I want to, as much as you can, eliminate dysfunction from, you know, our success equation, you know? So, and I think that starts on your staff. You know, if you could have, if you have a staff that has some dysfunction in it, I think it bleeds into your team.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have, you know how it is. You're going to have this coach telling this guy that, this coach telling that guy that, this coach telling that guy, you can't work out with him, work out with me and all that stuff. And I hate that stuff. So I'm going to be really mindful of just having great chemistry and, you know, not too many guys, but for me, I wanted a combination of some guys I knew, you know, that kind of knew the way I operate at Gonzaga, know the way we play, know me as a person. So that's why I brought those three guys, and they'll be great for the culture. And then I want some Arizona guys, because at the end of the day, in Arizona basketball speaks for itself and stands for itself. And I didn't want to come in here and be the guy and clean house and we're going to do this my way, which, you know, people perceive the Gonzaga way. And I mean, that could be the wrong thing. So I really try to take my time, get to know people down here, and I'm trying to make the best decisions for Arizona basketball, not necessarily the best decisions that make me most comfortable right now.
What's the best advice Fuey gave you?
Well, when I told him I'm going to take the job, he was just like, you know, have a chance to get the job. He said, wow, if you have a chance to get Arizona, you got to take it. And we never had that conversation about another job before. And then he told me, you know, as he said, you know, I thought it was pretty perceptive on his part. He was like, you know, if somebody would have told us 5 years ago that we would have played in two national championship games and Arizona would want to hire Gonzaga's assistant, he said, we would have said they were crazy. So pretty amazing. But the best advice he gave me was, he said, there's going to be some hard days. On those hard days, remember how much money you're making. So, but he also said, more often there's going to be a lot of good days and you're going to think, you know, they're really paying me to do this, you know? And so I thought that was great advice.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, and you know, being out of it, the biggest thing you miss is the players. Mm-hmm. I mean, you miss like actually having a chance to, I think the two biggest things I miss is putting together a plan and seeing if it works.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, all right, this is my vision. Let's put it into action, see if it works. Obviously, you got to get players to do that. And then the second thing is trying to impact someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, which is, you know, like, you know, I went and watched a video of Santangelo and Dan Dickow and talking about you and how happy they were for you. And to me, I mean, that's why you coach.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you coach, for those, you know, for the birthdays and the anniversaries and the kids in the weddings and the birth of the kids. I mean, in the holidays, like, to me, that's being an old fart now. I mean, like, that's the coolest time when people guys just pick up the phone and say, coach, I'm just checking on you. Yeah, I mean, shoot, I'm not dead yet.
Well, I think you're right. It is about relationships. And at the end of the day, I don't even remember many of the wins, you know, but I remember helping guys through their struggles, you know, and you know, one of the things I always think about is like, man, like Blake Steph was a great player at Gonzaga. And I was like, I wish I knew then what I know now, because maybe I could have helped him a lot more, you know, as a coach, you know, one of the great things about coaching, you know, is you talk about having a plan put together. You continue to get better over a long period of time. You know, these players only have a couple year window. you and I have hopefully 40 years to get better, and you do get better. And so, so I think about that, and just, you're right, impacting those guys. And I mean, I could go through 100 names, and I probably wouldn't be enough of guys that I love and I think about all the time. I probably don't do a good enough job, you know, texting them or staying in touch with them, but they're always on my mind, you know. And and the one thing, when you're working with young players, when they first start to struggle, they get to college, you know, it's inevitable. They're going to struggle. And I just always bring them out and say, you know what? I could write a book, or you look at every guy on that Hall of Fame wall right there, and I could tell you a story where that guy was struggling and he didn't know if he was going to make it. And so that's the joy in the process, is helping guys through that, you know?
Yeah. There's no, you know, it's so funny. I used to say all the time, say, you know, this looks really easy when you watch it on TV.
Yeah.
And then you get to campus, or, you know, like I say, like even when guys go from high school to college, like they don't understand the jump of learning how to practice hard, learning how to digest the schedule, playing with other good players.
Yeah.
All those things and how competitive it is. And it's hard. The one thing I tell guys who get jobs, and for what it's worth, is you work. How many years were you an assistant? 21, 22?
I was at Gonzaga, 22 years.
22 years. And you get this incredible opportunity. I tell guys all the time, it's like one of the things I tell you, enjoy it. You busted your ass to get to this point. It can never be a burden.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, it's a responsibility, but it can never be a burden because it's earned. No one gave it to you. No one walked up and said, well, that's the guy I want in Arizona. You know, like he's going to, you know, I mean, like, you know, you think about, and it's like one of my things when people talk about the transfer portal and everything else, people don't see all, like your first job, would you make it, Gonzaga?
I didn't make anything. I think maybe $2,000 from camp. My wife had to work at Macy's in the lingerie section. So that's how we paid rent. I think we made $900 a month combined.
Yeah. I mean, people don't see those. Yeah. My first job at Columbia, I made $12,500. I thought I was a millionaire. I never got into coaching for money. I never asked what I was getting paid, until I went from Long Beach to South Florida, just because there was a reason to ask. So, sure. I mean, like, you know, to me, it's about enjoying it and having fun with it, which that's to me what it's all about. But I just want to wish you luck. I mean, you're going to do a great job, and you're going to, you know, I mean, that place is just reeks with tradition and history. And probably the last thing I would just say, I'm not going to pull an Andy Katz. And let me ask you, I'm only going to ask you one more thing. I saw Katz's interview. I said, Katz, you said five times. I just got one more thing to ask. I said, you can't say that five times, Katz.
Hey, you know, as coach, we always do that at practice. Hey, guys, last thing. Well, wait, there's one more thing.
No, I was the worst then. That's like also when you're in your office and you call your wife and say, I'll be home in 5 minutes. And you hear your daughters in the background. He said he's going to be home in 5 minutes. That means 45, Mom.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, it's crazy. The whole portal and everything that's going on with it. How? I mean, like, that's a whole new, you know, we talked about grad transfer. You know, you talk about grad transfer. You talk about international. It's a whole new world. How do you approach it, I guess? You know, I'm trying to look back, and it's almost like it's trading places. I feel like, you know, I'm watching a movie, like this guy goes here, so I'm going to get this guy from, I mean, how difficult or different is it to come up with a game plan in dealing with the portal?
Well, you definitely got to be adaptable and you got to be flexible. And, you know, I'm hoping, you know, like all these things, you remember back in the day, we had the 5-8 rule and we had all these rules, and then common sense usually prevails. I'm hoping, and this is what it eventually does too, just, you know, we're in such an instant gratification society, and it's not just the kids, it's the adults.
Yeah.
You know, we're the ones who built this culture. You know, the adults are, the kids didn't build it, and they're part of it. And, but so things don't work out at school. I didn't get instant gratification. Now you can transfer and they want instant gratification again. And back in the day when you had to redshirt, at least when it didn't work out at school one, the kids had to slow down, take a breath, and then, you know, mature and get better, you know. And I mean, I can't think of how many guys at Gonzaga, you know, we helped improve, from a Kyle Wilcher, Kelly Olynyk, Jonathan Williams, Nigel Williams-Goss. Yeah. Those are good players, and they redshirted. And so I honestly, I'm going to try to utilize some redshirting here. I mean, I think it's, you know, deep on your roster, you know, players 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever. if there's a good redshirt candidate, redshirt here, try to develop them, because if they get a transfer, you know, free at any time, right, maybe, like, I don't know. I mean, I want them to be as good as they can and bought into development here in our culture. And it's a lot to wrap your head around. There's no doubt, you know.
Yeah. We redshirted every player who played for me at Long Beach State but Lucius Harris, including Brian Russell.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, when those dudes, now they probably would have been all gone, but when those dudes were juniors and seniors,
yeah,
man, we were good.
Yeah,
I mean, like, we had men, and we had to deal with, you know, like, we were playing Utah State, and they had a bunch of more, and they were old, and that's the reason we started doing it, because we were playing Vegas and Utah State, and I said, we got to get more mature. We got to get older. And except Lucius was a different story, because he was just that better. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, Brian Russell wasn't ready. I mean, you know, he was a physical athlete, but he had no clue whatsoever of how to play. No one recruited the guy. I mean, and we redshirted every single guy. I was the head coach here for six years.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I don't think you can do that this day and age, but I think there are guys that it's really advantageous for. So I definitely want to be open-minded to it. And I don't know if I want to try to beat people at, you know, doing things faster, getting there quicker.
Well, hey, I appreciate your time. I do. And good luck to you, man. And hopefully we can get out and see a game this year. We'll be able to get out and see some games, and you're going to have great success. You're going to have great success. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, much appreciated, and that's great advice. I'm going to go see my son tonight and go to the Suns game and kind of just relax and be a dad.
Awesome. Do it, man. All right. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.